right, nice job. Good set. Let's do some social kick.
And we're live. Welcome back to another episode of the Social Kick Podcast. I'm Brian Lundquist, joined by a full crew today. Luke Paddington, Dr. John Mullen. Sonia Wick has joined us today. What's up, Sonia? How are you?
I'm doing super great. Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to talk to the three of you. And I forgot my cocktail, but dang it.
Yeah, it's too bad. So we like to get together and drink beer and talk about swimming and endurance sports. And it's just a casual environment. So, but you've been up to a whole lot lately, namely this Eco Challenge race and the show being live to the public now. So we're very curious to hear a lot about that, but also about your background as an elite athlete and Ironman and epic adventures. So, but what have you been up to lately?
Yeah, since the show.
Since the show.
What's going on now?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been taking my, you leave Eco Challenge, you leave the show feeling like you're such an adventurer. And so I've kind of just taken that to keeping it close to home, living on the Central Coast. I've been surprised how many totally huge, fun little adventures we have. Like, we've got the ocean, we've got mountains, you can ride your bike places, you can sup, you can kayak. So I have been just as adventurous. I've just been keeping it like more localized than I usually do instead of gallivanting all over the world.
It's a little cheaper that way.
It's so much cheaper. Yeah. And you get to sleep in your own bed.
People don't tell you that Ironman races aren't cheap. And I don't even know what some of these other challenges are all about.
Oh yeah. I mean, the adventure racing community is like, they're really expensive to get to these races, and teams of four and a support person, so like five people getting them to China or Patagonia, or, and all the gear, you've got thousands of dollars in luggage fees that happen because so many sports, so much gear.
Sonia, I saw that was your first adventure race, right?
It was, yep.
And you decided to go on the hardest one in the world. So I got you. I like that. How did you prepare for that in terms of you know, the equipment, the personnel, knowing what the heck to do, and then the training? I mean, it's not an Ironman training. And Ironman training is the hardest thing I know of. So how do you prepare for that stuff? And mentally too, because, you know, talk about that.
Oh, I know. Okay. Yeah. So how do you do all? So first you have to get into the race, which, you know, you don't just sign up like Ironman. Everybody gets to get in for the most part if you get there on time. But this is, you know, a produced show by Mark Burnett and hosted by Bear Grylls. And so there's an application process. You put together a team and you apply, and then you cross your fingers for a couple months while they decide if you're going to be in the race or not. And we were lucky that in the promo video for the race, they said, this is the race that eats Ironman for breakfast. And I was like, oh, there's my in, right? If I go put together a team of Ironman athletes and kind of put it with that lens, like, you called us out, here we are, accept us. So I think it worked, and they accepted us. And so then we had 7 months to basically be like, wait, what are we doing and how do we do it?
Exactly.
And luckily, as Ironman athletes, you know, we know how to get fit, and we're used to being fit in three sports that are pretty different physiologically, right? We know how to cycle, we know how to swim, which is similar enough to paddling in that there is some crossover there, and we know how to trek or run. So we kind of were up to our own devices in terms of getting in shape, but where we really lacked was all of the skills. Like, we're climbing fixed ropes and rappelling down fixed ropes. We are whitewater rafting, outrigger canoeing. These are sports that we literally do not know how to do. Yeah. And so that was where all of our focus went to. Eco also asks you to get certain certifications so that they know you're coming in with a base set of skills and aren't going to present yourself as a danger in the rapids or climbing the fixed ropes. So we were really focused on, we got to get these certifications done. We have to learn the skills for the sports that we don't know how to do. I joined an outrigger club. Wow. The day we got into the race, because I knew we'd be spending a lot of time outriggering and someone would need to steer, and steering the outrigger boat is like a thing if you don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
So it was really, a lot of our training was less about getting in like the best shape of our life. And it was really about cramming all of these skills in that other teams, experienced teams already had so much experience with. So by the time we got all those skills done, it was like go time, you know?
Got it. But this isn't your first time learning new skills. I believe you didn't learn to swim or master swimming until in your 20s. So how do you go about learning these new skills, and what advice might you have for people that are looking to learn how to swim in their, you know, 20s or do outrigger canoeing and things like that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Yeah, I did not learn to swim as a child. I got all the way through having my daughter Annie in 2005, still didn't. I could doggy paddle. I had like actually a pretty mean doggy paddle. Like I could stay afloat pretty good in doggy paddle. I had never learned to still stroke. I definitely couldn't make it across the pool like doing freestyle. And I think having a daughter, you know, you change when you become a parent. And if you realize like I'm not stable in the water, and now I'm going to have a kid and they're going to be in the water, and do I really want to pass that, like, not knowing how to swim or being comfortable in the water on to them? So it definitely was a good time to learn how to swim. Plus I wanted to do triathlons. Mm-hmm. And I would say to anyone who's made it into adulthood, which, by the way, I think I read a statistic the other day that 48% of Americans do not feel that they could essentially save themselves in the water if they got in too deep.
Yeah.
So 48% are really not water comfortable. You know, you can totally do it as an adult. You literally hike yourself down to the YMCA and you sign up for swim lessons. And if you become a triathlete, it's really great because you're a really horrible swimmer and you want to get a lot better so you can be a lot better racing. So every winter, what I did was I just recommitted myself to swimming. And so in the winters, I would swim 6-7 days a week, and just I took the concept my first year swimming. I said, okay, I'm basically a 6-year-old, because that's like maybe when you learn to swim. So then the next year swimming, the next triathlon season, I was like, okay, now I'm 7. I'm a 7-year-old in the water. You got to keep your expectations kind of, you know, limited. And I kept seeing all these adults around me that would swim so fast and they made it look so easy. And I had to remind, okay, now you're an 8-year-old in the water. And, you know, eventually I was able to catch up to a lot of the adults.
Eventually, 7 years after you learned to swim, you became almost a world champion. You're that close to being a world champion. 7 years. That's, do you know, how long is a swimming iron?
I want to know what age you feel like you as a swimmer now.
Yeah, how old are you now?
How old are you in your swimming years now? Are you, I don't know, I'm curious.
Because you look pretty good when you swim. You have a good stroke.
I'm like 19.
19?
Like,
all right, that's
pretty, I'm a pretty bad swimmer for like comparing myself to 19-year-olds. You know, the adult like learning curve isn't as adaptive as kids and their muscle memory.
Yeah, but that's good. I'm finding this out the hard way, that swimmers don't do well in Ironman races.
Right, because you overswim.
Fact.
Burn. He comes out first, way ahead.
Got to be in first after the swim. We know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has to do half of a butterfly.
No, yeah. So not only do you put in the effort and have the discipline to say, okay, I'm going to learn these new skills and I commit myself to them and own it, but what about seeking out guidance from experts in their field? What was the learning process?
I laugh about swimming because you kittens who get to learn to swim when you're kids, like lucky you, because as an adult, you know, you want to get good. You go to a swim coach. They're dealing with someone who's swimming, you know, 220 for a 100, right. And you're trying to work on your technique and get extra sessions. And I like to joke that if you go to a running coach, if you go to 10 running coaches and you say, analyze my form, give me some tips, you're going to get like very little deviation on what you need to fix. You go to 10 swimming coaches, you're going to get 10 different opinions on how you should fix things. And so something that was hard for me to navigate in the beginning until I really embraced it was that you might go to one swim coach and get one line of advice or one sort of style of technique, and then you might go to another one and get something different. And the great thing about being an adult is that you're capable of holding multiple paradigms in your head and analyzing them for yourself. And so once I got over that and started being like, but you said this and you said that, and I stopped fighting that in my head and said, no, you know what? Everyone who I'm talking to has something valid, something I need to hear, something I need to take from them. Then things started, like I started getting a lot more momentum in the pool when I stopped fighting differing opinions online or you name it, and just started saying, okay, I'm going to hold all of these things in my brain and I'm going to just keep swimming and let things come as they need to come.
I think that's a huge point. In PT school, we learn, you know, gait mechanics and then running mechanics. And then you go to swimming and you're like, all right, what are the different phases of swimming? What's the universal terms and everything? There's nothing. Or there's so much debate. So like you're saying, I could totally see where someone who's so used to, like you said, very similar styles and similar terms and everything in running, where you go to swimming and you got people talking about different phases, different terms, different emphasis, especially when you're working on learning these skills, how it can be so confusing.
Yes. And a lot of the swim, you know, I was straight triathlete. I wasn't doing any swim competitions, but a lot of people who are teaching swimming come from, you know, the pool background. And that is a thing. It just is a thing. It's a dynamic that you have to, again, you have to take that advice. You have to hold it in your head, hold it in your mind's eye, know that it's there to help you, but you do kind of have to find your own way through it with a lot of hard work. And I think that's a good metaphor for life. You know, life isn't always like, go find one expert, do what they do, and you're going to get great. It's a lot of times navigating your own path to excellence and greatness and questioning a lot of things without getting frustrated.
Y'all, they didn't see I only saw a few episodes, like 7 episodes of the show. Oh, I was like, okay, world's toughest race.
Only 7.
Iron Cowboy's on it. You're good. Sonya's a how many times Iron Man? She's good. It's crazy. Listen, you know what the hardest thing is? They don't sleep. They don't sleep at all. You probably got in 10 straight days, how many hours in total did you sleep? And I'm talking about sleeping maybe on a rock. Oh, like how much sleep did you get in 10 days?
We did sleep on a rock. Actually, we slept 5 hours on a rock one time. I never counted. I never added it up. I would say we slept more than a lot of teams slept. We're kind of in that bubble between we aren't any good, but we're like a day ahead of the cutoffs.
Yeah.
So there was sort of this, we got a little bit more sleep than if we had been like, okay, we're going to go for the best finish place we can possibly get. We're going to push and we're not going to sleep. We were like, we're still a day ahead of the cutoff. Like we can probably take an extra couple hours in camp and get an extra couple hours of sleep. So, I mean, we did not sleep the first night. We slept 1 hour the first night and then the course closed down and we got 8 hours the second night because everyone got bedded down. And then from there on, I don't think we got more than like 3 hours here or there and maybe 1 5-hour stint in one spot.
So, I mean, how do you prepare for that, right? And how does it affect your head? You break down with it, right? With
the tire. Yeah. Yeah. You don't prepare for sleep deprivation. There's no adapt. It's not like you can train it into yourself or you can practice and you actually have an adaptation to it. Yeah. You just have to know what to expect and know that you need to fight through it together. We had trouble like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Like that time period is tough. Whereas when it starts to get kind of light or like 5 a.m., 6 a.m., you get refreshed as your circadian rhythm comes back around. So a lot of times we would bed down for a couple hours at like 2 to 4 or 3 to 5 because we were just kind of wacky and we'd rather just sleep in the mud for a couple hours and then wake up and be refreshed and rejuvenated when the sun was starting to come up. So that was pretty universal. I got us really lost one night and it was like, do we wander around lost on this lake in the middle of the night? Or do we just like pull off and sleep for 3 hours and wait for it to get a little more light so I can try to figure out where we are. So things like that, we'd get some hours, but none of it was great. You know?
Well, so just to frame it, you're doing this race. First of all, you learned to swim in 2005. It's 2020 and you've done 18 Ironman since then. So let's just say that, and you hadn't done any like Ironman triathlons at that point either. So that's more than one of year. You've been doing a lot and that's a lot more than most people are up to. Alongside you is a guy who you coached who did 50 Ironmans in 50 states in 50 straight days.
I know.
Let's just say you're not wired like normal people. So I'm curious to know from a toughness standpoint, you can't prepare for sleep deprivation, but were there other people in this race that were tougher than you? What did you learn about yourself in that process?
Okay, I'll tell you a great toughness story. Jeez, yes. I mean, there sure were. I think the one cool thing is that Amazon curated 330 of the most badass athletes I've ever seen in my entire life. I think we had like 11 people that had summited Everest, you know, people who'd run across country. I mean, this group of athletes that had amassed and really so few mega egos. It was pretty cool. Cause I think when people get to that point, they kind of have gotten over the other side of like doing it for achievement, achievement, achievement. And they're super cool souls. So day five of the race, we're trekking through the jungle, climbing up this river. There's like slippery rocks everywhere. I step on a rock, a move I had done, you know, 4,000 times up to this point in the race. My foot goes one way, my knee goes the other. I tear a ligament in my knee.
Ooh.
I've never torn a ligament anywhere. I mean, my body is made for war, and I've never been injured really in my life, but I'm like, oh, that is not a good sound or feeling. Something just happened. And we had like 30 miles to trek. You know, we're in the middle of a 30 mile trek. So as we keep trekking through the jungle, I'm like, oh, this is like, I think it's okay. And then a little bit later, oh, it's not super okay. And by the time I get done with the trek, I'm like kind of barely walking on this thing, but I got my hiking poles. So I'm making my way, and we pull into a camp, and I'm like, is this it? Are we done? Like, is my knee done? And I go to the medical and they do some tests. And I'm like, okay, it's not your MCL. It's not your ACL. It's like a side ligament. And I don't know which one, but go sleep for 5 hours. Wake up in the morning. We'll tape it up. We'll give you a whole bunch of drugs, you know, Tylenol, ibuprofen, whatever. And we'll see how it goes. So I take some drugs. I go get some sleep, wake up in the morning, and Team Sundance rolls in, comes over to talk. And Sylvia on Team Sundance had crashed her bike, tore her ACL, her MCL. Her knee is like four times the size of a normal knee. She's got it taped and wrapped. They're packed up and she's heading out. I literally at that point was like, my knee wasn't even swollen to double the size, you know? And I just tore one tiny side ligament in my knee. At that point I was like, I really had this moment of like, you are such a wimp, like get up and let's go. Like people are doing way worse with, you know, way more horrible injuries. And they finished, she finished, she like limped her way through another 5 days of racing.
That's such a high concentration of that type of people in the world that maybe ever existed.
Yeah.
Guy in the show had hypothermia. There was one guy who had heat stroke who, I mean, both these people were like, they couldn't do anything once they got it. And then next thing you know, they continued. I'm like, what?
Yeah. The cool thing about the race is for those experienced teams, both Team Bend, who had the heat stroke situation, Team Summit, who had the hypothermia, is they are willing to carry a team member as long as they need to. Yeah.
Wow.
Like they will not quit. And so with Dan, he went down on day one and he was out of commission for 72 hours and they put him in the boat and they paddled the boat without him paddling and they put him on his bike and they put a tow rope on him and they towed him while he did 0 watts. I mean, they're so committed to finishing these races that if they've got a person down, they will just tow him through the race.
What do you feel like you know about yourself now that you didn't know before doing that race?
Oh, I had this moment. We all know how important like the mental aspect is, right? Of racing Ironman, these endurance crazy events. But something I learned out there was I had this moment on day 8. We had left camp and I have trouble when it's really hot. In episode 2, you'll see I have like a meltdown because when I get overheated, I start thinking, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
And it's really linked to being like right on the cusp of heat stroke. Yeah. And my brain starts doing this, this is really hard. This is really hard. I don't think I can do this. This is really hard. I get into that place. I had it happen on day 2, episode 2. And then I also had it happen, but not filmed on day 8. So here we are, we're leaving the last camp. We've got a ton of mountain biking ahead of us. We're really good mountain bikers being triathletes.
Yeah.
And we're maybe 5 minutes into the day. And I had no warm up. I just slept. We had no warm up. We start climbing these super steep climbs. I have to like walk my bike up a hill and I start having it like heat stroke. And I don't think I can do this. And I had a panic attack. And so of course, James comes over and is like, what is going on? It's been 8 days of racing with Sonia. And what's going on, Sonia? And I'm like hyperventilating in the middle of the road. And so I like get control of it, get back on my bike. 20 minutes later, I'm still hot. I'm still not warmed up. And the thoughts come right back. I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do this. This is so hard. I have another panic attack and I stop and the boys come back. What's going on, Sonia? You know, and James said at that point, he thought, we're done. Our race is over. This chick is like, can't get control of herself, you know? And so they literally prayed for me a little bit and it gave me a chance to like breathe and kind of remember what I knew, remember things like my family loves me, you know, I'm loved. Like they said some really great words. And then James, I got up, felt a little better. And James kind of grabbed me by the shoulders. And he was like, I can push your bike for you. I can carry your pack for you, but I cannot change your thoughts. And I was like, it was one of the first times, because we as athletes have this constant internal chatter, but I think we're hiding it. And we are, to a large extent, hiding what we're saying to ourselves in our head. But because James has been through so much, he knew that because I was having this performance, I was not performing, I was having panics. He knew that I was like basically eating junk food in my head. And he called me out on it. And nobody has ever called me out, I thought, like in the middle of racing situation. He was like, you have to change it. You have to change what you're saying. So I'm like, crap, I just got called out massively on like the stuff I thought I was hiding. And I started thinking, okay, what can I change it to? I better change it to something. And I was like, all I could come up with is your core body temperature is fine. like, not good, not great. I couldn't say like, you can do this. The only thing I could say that I believed was your core body temp is fine. So I just repeated it. Your core body temp is fine. Your temp is fine. And maybe half an hour later, I'm like literally storming the castle up with our really fast rider, Sean, just like having a heyday on the bike. So it was like the thing to me is that you can reverse engineer it. You can look at your performance and you can be like, I'm not performing well right now. And then you can back it into your thoughts and be like, wait, what am I thinking? I always tried to go from the other direction. Like I need to control my thoughts, or I need to focus heart rate, or and then didn't, and just let the performance kind of flow from there. But it was a good litmus test to like reverse it.
Yes, Sonia, I was going to say that we had Tom Shields on the show. He's a gold medalist in 100 butterfly, and he tried to commit suicide recently. And he's worked to rewire his brain, literally completely rewired with positive exercises. He says like every couple of minutes, an alarm goes off, and that tells him to think this way and do this thing. And it's so anti what we know as athletes training, just to do it that approach. So it's quite resonating what you're saying as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm so glad that he's still with us. I'm really, really happy to hear that. We have a bigger problem with depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideation in indoor sports or high achievement sports than we know what to do with right now. And I'm glad he's talking about this. I've experienced my own stuff as well. And the more you open up and the more people share their stories, the more people come out of the woodwork and say, hey, me too. And what's this about? And how are you navigating through it? So yeah, this thought management is an important tool for mental health that we don't talk that much about, you know?
So for somebody transitioning from, let's say, a swimming background to get into adventure sports, or perhaps whether that be, you know, endurance races like Ironman or Attila, or, you know, any kind of thing that hasn't been imagined yet. It's so cool that this world seems to be blossoming and coming into the public eye in a way that we've never seen before. What advice might you give to people who, you know, maybe don't yet have that endurance gene, that they don't know that about themselves yet? That's kind of helped you as you've gotten into that. Did you gravitate toward them immediately and just love being a distance junkie? Or were there some things that you thought, okay, this is what has helped me find myself mentally, physically, and thus there's kind of this other carrot out there for people who may just be interested in it, but don't know that there's another reward that's really on the other side.
Yeah. I think people get into sport for all sorts of different reasons and at different times in their life. My advice is, you know, when it comes to athletics and it comes to being healthy and it comes to living a healthy lifestyle, there are so many ways to skin that cat. There's absolutely no reason you should be doing something that you don't like. Like, if you don't like running, like, please join a rock climbing gym. You know, if you don't like rock climbing, like, please double down on yoga, or I mean, there's just so many avenues out there that you can explore fitness and moving your body in a healthy way. There's no reason to do something you don't like. So the way I got into the sport was I just was like so high on what I was uncovering. And I started short distance triathlons for 2 years. I did Olympic distance shorter, and my coach at the time had grand ideas of me, you know, maybe looking to turn professional ITU Olympic distance racing. And I just kept thinking, it's going to take, you know, I'm only 8 in swimming years. Like, how am I going to swim with these ITU girls who are like college swimmers? I've got like 10 years before I'm going to be 18 and swimming. So the longer I went, the more the swim became a smaller and smaller and smaller portion of the race. And I started to do better. I could find the front of the race earlier on the run instead of running out of real estate. And that lit me up because it felt good to kind of be in it, to win it. And so I think when those light bulbs go off for somebody, that's the universe telling you to move more in that direction. And if you get out and you go running and you're like, I hated every step of that, then like throw the running shoes in the trash, go look for something else. Life is way too short. But for those of you who might be like inspired by it, or you go out and you do some stuff and you're excited, for me, I think it's all about community. It's just find like-minded individuals who you can go out, find 3 dudes you can go drink beer with, right? 3 dudes you can go to Master Swimming with, and get yourself inside of other communities of people who are doing it, because they're going to be really welcoming and they're also going to fast track your education through the sport. You're going to hit all those learning curves a lot quicker because you've got people who care about you, who are willing to take you under their wing. And there's nothing better than someone in my position with a lot of experience seeing the sport through the lens of somebody new in it. Like, we love it. So get yourself into those communities and let somebody else give their time to you.
Sonia, where can people keep up with what you're up to today?
I'm around the internet under Go Sonia, GOSONJA. I'm on Instagram. GoSonia.com is my website. And then if you watched the race on Amazon Prime Video and you were interested in the other racers, I started a podcast about a month ago called Tales of Toughness. And I interview racers from race, and we get to tell all their untold stories, which is That's really awesome. Fun. Right? Yeah. Awesome. So Tales of Toughness as well on any of the podcasty places.
You're such a badass. We're so inspired. We'd love to talk to you again at some point. But thanks so much, Sonia, for being on the Social Kick podcast.
And yeah, thank you.
See you next time.